910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. The White House is paying close attention now that Israel's war cabinet has voted to expand operations into the Gaza border town of Rafah. It happened after a ceasefire talks between Israel and Hamas broke down.
There was a moment of hope with those talks, but they have fully broken down. Hamas demanding a permanent ceasefire, Israel offering only a temporary one. And of course, caught in the middle of all this, millions of Palestinian civilians and more than 100 Israeli hostages, including five Americans.
ABC's Martha Raddatz. A line of severe storms is barreling across the South from Texas to Florida, leaving hundreds of thousands without power. Donald Trump's former fixer, Michael Cohen, is expected to testify next week in the former president's hush money trial. Target says it won't sell LGBTQ plus merchandise to commemorate Pride Month in stores this year, but will sell them online. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Environmentalists are in court fighting the Department of Natural Resources over a big factory farm in central Wisconsin. Adam Voskel is with Midwest Environmental Advocates. He says the DNR should have allowed public input on the CAFO's wastewater permit.
We're seeing concerns over CAFOs in western Wisconsin, too, where there have been significant spills and fish kills.
The DNR has a month to respond. The Wisconsin State Patrol is urging drivers and bicyclists to be aware of their surroundings, to share the road, and keep everyone safe. The State Patrol highlights bicycle safety each May. Bicycles are considered vehicles in Wisconsin with the same rights and responsibilities. Last year, 7 bicyclists were killed in crashes in Wisconsin and 699 people were injured. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Progressive presents 10 things on a plumber's to-do list that are harder than getting a small business insurance quote. Waking up for 5 a.m. plumbing disasters, finding out why water is pouring from the ceiling, replacing a pipe in a home from the 1800s, then dealing with invoices or your awkward apprentice or that really weird smell, and then there's breathing and eating and, of course, clogs. But the easiest thing on any small business owner's to-do list? Seeing if you could save on the business insurance that's right for you. Get a quote in as little as 7 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided and serviced by affiliated and third-party insurers.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 a.m. WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. They're at it again. The Republicans again. More impeachment. Republicans are planning another one. This time over Joe Biden and his Israel policy. Over saying, look, I'm going to draw a line. Don't want you going into a certain place. We're not giving you the weapons to do this. Do what you're going to do, but we're not going to be part of it. Evidently, Corey Mills, Republican of Florida, first-termer, he's not happy. And look, you know, it's his right to do, throw it out there. He evidently stole a lot of the ideas from the 2019 impeachment of Donald Trump. Because you may remember, Donald Trump kind of did something like this, in a way. Congress had allocated some monies to be given to Ukraine. And Donald's like, hey, you know, I need some dirt on that Biden guy. Get me the dirt and I'll give you the stuff. And he was impeached for that, rightly so. I mean, that kind of twist in the arm, little kickback scheme. You know, again, I get it. Now, if Mills can show where Biden said, hey, get me some dirt on Trump, I'd be like, yeah, impeach him, because that's wrong. Who would want that to be the reality? But it's not. Now understand, Republicans are you know, they're just they can taste how badly they want to impeach Biden. I mean, three, I guess, committees that are currently looking into the Biden family businesses, still waiting for those impeachments to happen. Lauren Boebert had hers over the southern border, which, again, not impeachable. I'm reading through this guy's statement as he unfurled this impeachment. I'm going, here's clearly a guy who failed high school civics. At least that's what I came up with. And how he got into Congress, not quite sure. But we'll see. And look, by all means, impeach the president, because it's clearly working for you. Now, the other guy who maybe we should be looking into a little bit, evidently had a little shindig at Mag-a-Lago. Had some oil executives in town for a little arm twisting, a little schmoozing, a little arm twisting. I'm sure a little of this, a little of that. And he's requested $1 billion for his campaign from the big oil execs. And look, here again, I give him credit. At least he's being honest. Go, look, you give me $1 billion and I'm going to give you the political payback. I'm going to destroy all of Biden's environmental stuff. We're going to trash the environment together. I am your guy. I am all in. I'm your Stormy Daniels. I am going to be the one who just trashes the environment. We're going to get rid of those stupid EVs, and it's going to be gas guzzlers. I'm going to get rid of those cafes. He didn't say that, but that was part of it. We're going to make sure Americans get 3 miles to the gallon so that you make tons of money. And of course, we're going to lower your taxes so you don't have to pay anything. But this is how they do it. Because $1 billion may sound like a lot of money to the oil industry. No. And this is transactional government. This is the kind of stuff that we should be concerned about in an enormous way. That's why on Wednesday you had Vice President Kamala Harris tiptoeing. And again, this is the thing that gets me about Democrats, too timid. You got the right message. Get out there and scream it from the mountaintops. But evidently she said about the Supreme Court that this court has shown itself to be an activist court. She says, I worry about the fundamental freedoms across the board. And this is where she gets a little timid, where she should be going, look, here's what's the problem. But she says, I don't want to, at this point, use my voice in a way that is alarmist. No, Kamala, use your voice. Be very alarmist. She said, but this court has made it very clear that they are willing to undo recognized rights. Yes! You should have done away with the first part of that. Look, they are going to fundamentally change this country. They are going to continue to attack women's rights. They're going to continue to attack labor rights. They're going to, if you're in any of the other communities, if you find yourself in any of the others, LGBT, interracial, whatever, find yourself in any of those outside of the original intent, land-owning white males over 21. If you're anywhere but that, it's you they're coming for. Now, look, as I've said before, as a land-owning white male over 21, I can live in that world. But I don't want my daughters living in that world. I don't want their children growing up in that world. And this is where they've told us repeatedly where they want to take us back to. So any of the other stuff, the civil rights movement, forget that. The LGBT rights stuff, forget that. Voting rights, we're gonna undo all of that stuff. And down the list, all of the 20th century, as I've said. They want to repeal. They want to go back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s. So for me, I look at the moment we're in, and Kamala, much more vocal on this you need to be. Use your voice in an alarmist way. They are coming for us. They are coming to destroy the country that we built and that we love. These people hate America. They love an idealized version that they've never lived under, that they can only fantasize about. And do they fantasize? You know, look at the porn usage in red states. But, you know, I'm in this spot going, Democrats, you need to tough it up. Because, as I've said, that which my grandparents' generation built is under a full frontal assault. And for me, as a labor guy, when I look at the fact that this court has not seen a labor issue that they don't want to tear apart, my mind goes, you know, how much, if there is a Trump term, how much do we lose? Do we make unions illegal? Do we allow yellow dog contracts again that says, hey, if you ever talk to a union, we'll never have to hire you? Do we allow blacklisting? Do we allow all of the things that the Supreme Court of the past has stood up for us on? The right to strike, the right to join and form unions, the right to free association in that world. And the sad reality is I see this court as one that would most certainly tear all that apart. And then go the other way. You know, any of those gun restrictions, if you're a gun person, if you're like, hey, maybe we should have sane gun laws. You know, I was having this conversation with someone the other day where there was a three-year-old who had a gun at school. Three-year-old had a gun. And preschool, three-year-old with a gun. But, you know, I said, look, you know, the Constitution doesn't say over 18. Constitution doesn't put any restrictions on gun ownership. The gun fetishists, three-year-olds might be packing. And that may be the fantasy world. Everyone's got a gun. There are very real consequences to someone like Trump getting reelected. There are very real consequences to all of the nonsense that's being thrown at us to go, oh, Biden's bad. We should give Donald another chance. Like, we forgot what the 4 years of Trump actually looked like. Like, we forgot the assaults on our rights and the assaults on sanity. And this is where I keep coming back to. We need a much more aggressive Democratic Party to come out and say what is. You know, yesterday we talked about the fact that most people don't know what the major legislation is that Biden has gotten passed. Four major, massive pieces of legislation. And, you know, the vast majority of people, I never heard of it. You heard it? It's because they don't have a mechanism to get that out. They don't have the platforms to get that out. And they're not doing a lot of it. They got 6 months. Get to work. So if it means being a little bit alarmist, if it means being a little bit angry, means shaking the fist, got to do it there, Kamala. You're the one. Get out there. Get to work. Want to hear your thoughts. Are you as concerned as I am? That these extremists could take over and that 1880s, 1850s, 1830s kind of ideology could take hold? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, data from 2022, Evidently, in the construction industry, you had 1,069 fatalities on the job. And of those, 395 of them were people falling. So fatalities from falling. So that's why this week is National Safety Stand Down Awareness Week. And the idea is that, hey, let's talk about protecting ourselves in places where we're off the ground. Me personally, I don't do off the ground. I don't bounce as well as I used to. But for those who are brave enough to go up there and work on roofs and skyscrapers and, well, all that other stuff, it's an important week. And that's why I've asked Liliana Calderon to come talk with us. She's the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers Director of Health and Safety. If you want to check out the Bricklayers website, bacweb.org. Liliana, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you for having me on.
So this is a great thing, I think, raising awareness of workplace pitfalls, things that, might save your life.
Absolutely. And like you said, one life is too much. And, we work out in the industry, the construction industry, it's hazardous. There's a lot of things that can go wrong real fast. And falling from elevation is one of those things. And we got to be prepared for it. We have to be aware and make sure that we are trained in the equipment we're using and anything around us that can potentially cause us harm.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I was thinking about bricklayers, and I'm going, the good thing about bricklayers, they're usually on the ground. But then I was going, well, probably not, because, eventually you got to go up there. So, this is important for bricklayers as well, right?
Absolutely. We start off on the ground, but we always end up on top. We use scaffolds, mast climbers. We sometimes are on ladders, lifts. So, yeah, and sometimes we're up on roofs doing parapet walls. So it is work from heights all the time. I mean, we do start at the bottom, but we always go up.
Yeah, but you look at all the injuries and the fatalities and all of the things that have happened. And look, things have gotten better over the years. And I think it's because of having awareness weeks like this one where you raise the issue and you really start thinking about safety. But for me, the number one, the best tool to have in your safety toolkit is a union card.
Absolutely. I mean, the unions, everyone from across the aisle, are our allies. We hone down on safety. Safety is number one. We live it, we talk it, we walk it. We walk the line and we talk it. But, I think as union members, we are better off starting at our job sites as apprentices. You get trained on OSHA 10s, OSHA 30s, hazard awareness training on equipment that you'll be using. It's a step forward than going out to the job and not knowing one thing from the other and what potentially can cause you harm.
Now, I remember I just got out of high school and someone said, hey, you want to build houses? So, for a summer, I swung a hammer and, the kind of training I got is, well, here's a hammer. And everything else was just figuring it out. Whereas, as you've said, you have an apprenticeship program with someone who's going to mentor you and bring you along. And it's part of the reason that I didn't do construction more than a summer, other than it was freaking hot. But this is a really important thing to bring up in that mentorship, that apprenticeship program, that, hey, this is how you do it right.
No, absolutely. I mean, it goes a long way. Starting out, a lot of these kids come in, they're young, they're green, they haven't worked construction at all. Maybe their family hasn't come from construction. They don't come from a construction family. So it's the first time on the job site. And so they need that training, that initial training at the apprenticeship program. And they need that mentorship because, like you said, someone has to teach you how to do it the correct way. Otherwise, you're going at it, by yourself, and you can totally do things that will harm you and maybe potentially injure you and hopefully not cause death, yeah. Right? So I think having those apprenticeship programs is key. And that's, the union does a really great job in training all the apprentices and all their members.
Yeah, I mean, the hope is that they get through it. My construction years ended. A guy shot a nail through my foot. That's enough. I'm done. Because he didn't know what he was doing. So by having other people who know what they're doing may help you as well. But I want to go back to that safety thing, because for me, having that union card is so important. having that tool. And it's the empowerment, I think, that comes from it. I say this all the time. I've been driving a truck for, you know, I've been in the trucking industry over 30 years. I've never taken an unsafe truck on the road because I've always had the empowerment to say, the brakes are out of adjustment or something's wrong. Fix it. I'm not taking it. And it's that kind of backing. And I don't want to keep beating this, but I think it's extremely important to understand that our union brothers and sisters do have a leg up. And I want everyone to have that empowerment. But I think it's important to point out.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and when we talk about safety, you know, we train our members to make sure you do a pre-test planning before you start any type of work, because you might start work in the morning doing maybe this wall on the south elevation, and that gives, you know, you might be on a scaffold, so you have to check that scaffold that it's erected correctly, that all your plank are on correctly, that your guardrails are on. And then maybe the job changes later in the afternoon and you're in another side of the building, and now, you know, you're up on heights, you're up on a roof, you need your PPE, you need a harness, so pre-test planning is key when we do anything on job sites. That way you're already thinking about what you need to check, all those things, you know, checking the boxes, making sure that everything's correct before you even get on it.
So obviously this being the National Stand Down Safety Week, every week should be Safety Week, I think. So what is this? What's the act? I mean, with normally when you have some kind of a week, there's normally an act that's associated with it. What have you guys been doing to recognize this, to raise awareness to it? What are you guys doing?
So the stand down basically started back about 11 years ago. This is the 11th annual stand down week. CPWR, NIOSH, and OSHA started this. And it raises awareness the whole week. There's webinars, Spanish and English, on falls, the hazards, proper PPE, how to wear it, how to take it off, how to make sure it's working correctly. And then what we're doing, we have also put on some webinars. We've also put out toolbox talks, how to use ladder safely, how to get on scaffold safely, PPE, how to wear that correctly. We put out a whole set this week. And then we are working on a 4-hour hazard awareness training to come out in the next couple of months to kind of hone down on falls, because it's not going away. You know, the numbers keep rising and it's unfortunate. And, you know, we're trying to do that outreach with our members, making sure that they have the right information so they can keep safe.
A big part of this has to be your partnership with the contractors. I know in the building trades, the union and the contractors, they're generally somewhere close together. I'm sure there's a lot of participation to ensure that, because they don't want anyone getting hurt either, because it's not good for their bottom line, right?
Yeah, correct. I mean, you know, someone gets injured or loses their life, that's costly, right? For the employer, for the contractor. Now you have to hire a new person, train that new person. Instead, you know, if contractors have that buy-in of safety, you can keep that person safe and continue and be productive, right? And with the stand down, we really want to make sure that we take time to think about safety. You know, sometimes it's a go, 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 let's produce. And sometimes, you know, we tend to not think about safety on to specifics. And I think this week really hones down and makes sure that everyone takes that time to think about safety and be safe.
No, you know, I was looking at Twitter and some of the stories of people sharing, especially some of the near misses that they had where they got lucky, and how this awareness week has made them rethink some of those things. Can you share some of those kind of stories where, you know, maybe in your career, you said, well, I dodged a bullet there.
Listen, I can tell you many stories. I'll tell you one personally. I was an apprentice. I was on a scaffold. The laborers had moved the plank so that we can go over some tie-ins that tie into the wall. And I was striking a wall, you know, I was finishing it up and tooling it. And I was just tooling, walking. And then all of a sudden I teeter-tottered and I was able to grab myself from the pipe scaffold and bring myself back. I mean, when I tell you that was a heart attack, that was a heart attack. That was luck. If I would have kept going and not had that pipe scaffold next to me to grab, I might have gone down, and I would have gone down about 15, 20 feet. And, you know, it makes you think. It really does. And I was an apprentice then. It really made me think how quickly things can go wrong. And it made me think about the safety of myself, but also my coworkers. So since then, I was really focused on making sure everything was safe before I did anything or anyone else did anything, because I don't want to witness someone getting injured, and I didn't want to be injured myself, right? But those are the near misses, and you don't think about them because you're just working, and it's every day. This, you know, sometimes it's the same thing, repetitive, and you get used to it. And then out of nowhere, there I am, teeter-totting, about to go down, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's one of those things where, you know, I got away with it yesterday, and right. You think, well, I could do it again. For instance, I was watching, you know, one guy talk about, you know, how he fell off a ladder and how, you know, you shouldn't stand on the, everyone goes, oh, it's common sense. You don't stop and stand on the top step. But he's like, you know, I just needed another couple of inches. So I had one foot up, and that took him off balance. And it sounds like common sense, but if you're really not thinking about it, if you're focused on getting the job done, I can see how you can make mistakes, and they could be fatal.
Oh, absolutely. And it like I said, it goes quick. And sometimes it's just you're trying to save a minute or two, right? Because you don't want to get down the ladder, go get another ladder that gives you a little extra height. You want to just get it done. And you think, I'm just going to get it done 2 seconds and I'll be done. But those 2 seconds, you can be down on the ground.
No, the hope is that people take this seriously during this week and every week, especially, you know, to be honest, but while we're focusing on this, last line of questioning I want to get to you, because, you know, every week should be apprenticeship week. High school kids are going to be getting out of school soon. I know you guys have an incredible apprenticeship program. You know, the bricklayer's trade is an incredible trade. You know, what's the pitch for people wanting to get into the industry? You know, what brought you in?
It brought me in. I fell in love with it. I can honestly say I just fell in love with the trade, but it was a good career choice. It has provided me with a home, financial stability. I can look now. I mean, I was 20 something years old when I started, but now that I'm in my early 40s, I'm thinking about what my retirement looks like, and I have money, right? And to the new kids coming in, I know they're not thinking about retirement, but they have great benefits, health benefits. They can make good money, and they can get a house, a car, all the things they really want, because this trade provides you that stability, financial stability, and much more, right? It's a hard job, but it's very satisfying.
No, I happen to see that Mike Rowe guy, I'm not a huge fan, but I happen to see him say that this generation coming up, my son who just turned 18, his generation, they're going to be the tool belt generation, because they're the ones, you know, the first generation in a while that have been pointed toward the building trades, toward that kind of vocation. Because look, we're spending a lot of money on rebuilding the country, and hey, we realize that that our parents and our grandparents and old people aren't going to be around forever. Someone's got to learn to rebuild stuff. So are you seeing a lot of young people coming towards the bricklayers and allied craft workers union? Are you seeing that kind of shift that I'm told is happening?
No, yeah, absolutely. You know, these kids, they want to get hands-on, you know, they want to be hands-on. And with the building trades and with our union, you know, we're trying to gear the high school students that are coming right out and get them right into the trades, right? By making it a safe place to work, an equitable place to work, right? It's diverse workforce. I think it's engaging to those younger folks that are coming in. Their generation is very diverse and very outspoken, and we're trying to make construction industry just as inviting.
Yeah, no, I happened to go to one of the conventions and a couple of years ago, and I saw your union had a great display, and they had this thing that was picking up these giant bricks, and I'm going, you know, had they those when I was 18, 19, maybe I'd have been a bricklayer.
Yeah, you're talking about the mule.
Yeah.
You know, we have, you know, technology is crazy, right? It's coming in each every way, right? And the mule, what it does is it picks up that block, and it's light. So it picks it up and it puts it down, it sets it down. And it really is so that it helps, you know, us bricklayers that are a little older, our shoulders are a little shots. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible tool. And another one of those neat little things that might bring people to the trade. But Liliana, I appreciate the time. I wish you the best. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Anytime. Thank you so much for having me on.
Anytime, Liliana Calderon. She is the Director of Health and Safety there at the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. Make sure you check out their website, bacweb.org. And remember, it's National Safety Stand Down Week. Love to hear your stories. Are you participating? Have you heard of it? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Isolated evening storms. Tonight, mostly clear, lows in the low 40s. For tomorrow, sunshine's back, nice day, high in the mid to upper 60s. Sunshine to start Sunday, then increasing clouds for the afternoon. Chance of storms late. High mid-70s. It's 39 right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
So I have super parallel parking skills. And on the east side where I live, I will often sit on my front porch and like a play-by-play call as if it was a sport. Parallel parking to me is a sport. I'm the Stephen A. Smith of parallel parking. That should go on a t-shirt.
We'll get you one made.
Oh my gosh.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it appears that not a lawyer, don't even play one on TV, but I think it appears that the Trump defense, I think all they're really trying to work for is a mistrial at this point. Because it doesn't look good for him, not at all. And you know Trump has to be, you know, about to explode inside. And I bet the reason he keeps falling asleep is they're drugging him. That's the only way he sits silently through any of this stuff. And look, Trump having to sit there and listen to Stormy go through all of their tryst, that had to be painful because he could do nothing to shut her down. He was powerless. And I got to tell you, I thought of Foster Freeze. For those who don't remember Foster Freeze, he ran for governor a long time ago. I think it was Texas. When he was talking about rape, he said, well, you know, if it's going to happen, just lay back and enjoy it. I could not help thinking about, you know, I wonder if Trump is enjoying this. And here to share some thoughts on, well, the Stormy testimony and all that is this trial. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. You know, I got to tell you, am I alone in the thinking that somehow they're drugging this guy because he's falling asleep, and especially, you know, with this kind of salacious stuff that you would think might get him a little blood boiling considering the wife and kids are listening?
So one of the things that happened on Tuesday is he was pretty animated when Stormy Daniels was talking about stuff. And he apparently at one point looked at his attorney, Susan Nicholas, and was like wagging his finger and being very animated, but he still wasn't yelling. He's been admonished by the judge for cursing loudly. So at the very least, I guess he quit doing that. He tamped that down. But Thursday, man, Thursday is when it got interesting. And I think when she was up there for the prosecution, she was really nervous. And then I think she kind of got into a groove. And by the time they got to the second day of cross-examination, she was taking no crap from anybody. And I think that probably either intimidated or excited. Unclear. And I mean, I think honestly, it got to a point where Trump's lawyers started badgering her in a way that I feel like it kind of, it started to make them look bad. It seemed like if they weren't calling her crazy, they were basically insinuating that she was a hooker or that she was a slut. Like, it was very slut shamey, and it was very, you know, you're nuts.
But she's a porn star. I don't know. I don't know that that card works on a porn star. I call me strange. I just don't think it works.
Well, the idea that somehow because you're a porn actor and director that you don't have any values, you know, or that it's okay to basically have some sort of casting couch situations and very Weinstein-esque stuff going on doesn't, like, that doesn't mean that that's okay. And they sort of implied that it was. The other thing that I would say was really remarkable with Stormy is that there were a couple of times where Trump's lawyer was reading off quotes saying, you know, you said this, or did you, what did you mean when you say this, or something like that. And every time Stormy Daniels would be like, when did I say that? Where did you show me where I said that? And whenever she would do that, it would sort of stop the flow of the defense side. And Susan Echols had to like go searching through exhibits and try and find the right thing and then bringing it up. And what was very interesting is every single time that Stormy Daniels said, I didn't say that, or show me where I said that, it was wrong. Like, whatever she said that Stormy said was not even close. And so it felt like this thing where it's like, are you trying to get her to admit to something that she didn't say or that she didn't do?
Yeah.
And I think that really made things look bad for Trump as well. And it was just, I mean, it ended, there was this whole conversation about dinner, whether they had dinner, and that conversation went on, like that back and forth went on for over an hour. And I'm just like, what are you doing?
Yeah. No, you just move her along quickly. I'm no, you know, legal strategist, but I don't think you belabor the point. I don't think you keep hammering on the issue there like that. But, you know, the reality is, you know, I think you're right. I think they were trying to trip her up into something. And when you get, you know, bargain basement lawyers, because nobody, I don't know how many people want to work for Trump given his track record. Maybe this is what you get.
The interesting thing is I've heard a lot of compliments about Susan Echols. And I would say too, Todd Blanche is supposed to be a big top lawyer. And so I don't know if Trump is sort of pigeonholing them into a certain kind of defense, because his whole thing has been, this never happened, right? Like, I never had an affair with her. I don't know her, you know, never met her, right? And that really doesn't hold up. But for some reason, they keep sort of trying to push that narrative, and it's got to be because the client is making them do it.
No, look, understand. And I said this about Bill Clinton, too. You know, the reality is, if someone were to shove a microphone in my face and say, you know, did you do this? The answer is no. The answer is always going to be no. I'm never going to admit to that, ever. I'm going to take it to my grave. And I do understand that line of thinking. Could be just because I'm a man, but I get it.
And I think what was interesting too, the final piece of Stormy Daniels' testimony happened, and then they went to on a lunch break on Thursday. And right before the lunch break, Trump's lawyer said, look, we're probably going to file a mistrial again, a renewal for a mistrial or something like that. And so the judge said, okay, we're going to let the jury go early and then we'll argue about this. And one of the arguments from Trump's lawyers was, look, she prejudiced the case by giving so much detail in this situation, and it has nothing to do with this case. And the prosecution says, oh, beg to differ, because all of these salacious details, of which there are many, give a reason that Trump would want to pay her hush money and would want to hide it, because this is humiliating stuff. And the thing that I loved was when the prosecutor said, look, we've got pages and pages of more detail that we didn't bring up because we felt like it was, you know, just gratuitous at that point, and that it would, you know, be insulting to the witness. We would be more than happy to submit that into the record.
Wow. Yeah, I know. Look, you know, none of this stuff is easy. If you're Trump, you got to be going, how do I get out of this?
Well, I think the first thing is don't cheat on your wife.
Yeah, there is that. Now, I saw Rick Scott was in the courtroom. Why is Rick Scott there? The Florida senator.
I think a lot of people are going to start to show up because Trump has told his advisors that he feels like nobody's supporting him. There's nobody outside the courtroom. He doesn't have any MAGA people holding up signs and throwing a fit. Like, at most, they're like less than five, you know, just a little handful. So inside the courtroom, he's had some of his staff members. Eric Trump has been there. And then now politicians are starting to come in. Rick Scott came in today, and one of the things that happened at the lunch break is that he then started slamming the judge's daughter and all of these things that are mandated that Trump can't do in the gag order. So what is interesting is the gag order says that Trump can not only not say these things, but he can't ask somebody else to say these things for him. And there's really no way to prove, I mean, unless you put some people on the stand and start asking questions, if Trump then did persuade Rick Scott to say these things because he can't, except that they rode together from Florida on the plane and they came together in the car Rick Scott's got a big Senate election going on, and his Democratic opponent keeps outraising him, you know, hand over fist. So Rick Scott needs Trump bad. So, yeah, that's the motive.
He had to come kiss the ring. I got to stop. I got to get away from this. There's nothing good in this and following this anymore for me. I gotta move on. But interestingly enough, what's this the weird poem that Ivanka Trump put out on Instagram?
So she shared this video of Tom Waits, of all people, reading this poem, and it's something I had never heard before. But it's basically a poem that talks about, you know, light out of the darkness, and it was kind of cryptic, and it seemed like, you know, it was something about people badgering you and, you know, and you'll still shine and you can fight back. I mean, it was basically a message to her father. And it's a cryptic enough that she can send it to him and he'll get it. But it's also still something that, if you know, normal people are not going to get, you know, normal people aren't going to look at that and be like, you know, Ivanka is grossly supporting her dad who hooked up with the porn star who he said looked like her.
And look, you know, none of this. I'm waiting for Van Jones to come out and go, yeah, now he's presidential.
Jones.
I'm sorry. That was right. But here's the thing. While we've been focusing on the porn star and all the salacious details and all that, they've been talking about if Trump wins, you know, what his presidency could look like. And, you know, one of the things I found interesting is the Project 2025, you know, led by the Heritage Foundation. They're saying that Trump should make a concerted effort to execute like 40 prisoners on death row. So we're going to not only make executions great again. Also, he says he wants to, assassination squads to go into Mexico to kill cartel leaders. So we're going to invade another country. Death, you know, if one end isn't bad enough, death on the other.
It's really kind of weird because I think when Trump was in office, Mark Esper talks about this in his book, where he said that Trump asked them, I want some kind of ideas for if I wanted to go after the cartels, what we could do. And one of the ideas was, you know, send drones. Then there was sending the assassination squad. And the other one is put boots on the ground in Mexico, and a ground invasion from the United States into Mexico, and sending American soldiers, everybody's sons and daughters, to die in Mexico for the cartels. And what's crazy is this actually polls really well among Americans. And I'm just like, my theory is what polls well is, you know, kill the cartels.
Yeah.
What doesn't probably pull well is we're going to institute the draft to send all your children to Mexico. that's probably not going to pull well.
Yeah, you got to wonder how the Mexicans will feel about it.
And I think a lot of the treaties that we made over the last, you know, several decades, I'm just wondering, like, how does that work? What does that mean for, you know, the UN? Like, what kind of meeting is that going to be at the UN, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, you start thinking about, you know, some of the stories you hear about the rise of Hitler and all of that stuff. You know, you start executing people and, you know, go after the others. And I look at my congressman, Scott Pardon Me Perry, who, you know, House Oversight and Reform Committee, they held a hearing on Tuesday, as you point out, where he goes back after, hey, the replacement theory, it's real.
It was the worst possible point that he could bring up.
Yeah.
Right. Like they're in a briefing where they're talking about the anti-Semitism on college campuses. And the briefing is from national security people. Like, this is a serious deal where they're talking about the increase of anti-Semitism and how Jewish students are being faced with a lot of violence and a lot of threats. And so Scott Perry chooses that moment to be like, I have a point to make. I want to talk about how the great replacement theory is real. And everybody is just like, are you serious? Like, this is the moment you choose to bring this up. And the whole idea is that, well, you know, white people are going to be the minority because of some conspiracy by Jews to get, you know, more brown people to breed.
And it's Jews who are doing this? I thought it was.
Yeah.
I thought it was, well, Democrats.
That's the crazy thing. I thought, well, Democrats are obviously run by Jews. Because George Soros.
Okay. All right. I didn't know that.
And the Jewish space laser, right?
Yeah. No, I learned something new every day.
Things you learn every day.
You learn something new, I guess, every day. But look, you know, this is my congressman who, you know, Scott, pardon me, Perry, who I never ceases to amaze me when he comes out with this kind of stuff. But I think you're right. I, you know, sadly, I think, you know, his base, this is what they want to hear. So I guess, you know, brain worms. I got brain worms.
If we could just get more politicians to use that as an excuse, right? All of a sudden, RFK Jr. has brain worms. He did not admit this on television or anything. He was in his divorce case, I believe it is, in 2012. He explained that he had been diagnosed by this doctor of having a worm in his brain that like ate some of it and that it was causing him all kinds of issues. And then the worm died in his brain, presumably from eating the brain. I don't know.
How'd the worm get in there is the question.
That is an excellent question. I mean, I have no idea how this stuff works. The only thing I could think about is tequila, right? That has the worm.
Like, no, because my mind goes to the place of, you know, when I was a kid, you know, growing up in the projects, neighbors, you know, people had cockroaches. And I had friends who had, you know, cockroaches crawl into their ears and they would have to go to the hospital and they would freeze it to where it would die. But it basically stayed in your head. So I'm wondering, did a giant worm crawl in his ear and start eating his brain? And he's offered to eat 5 more brain worms, you know, to debate, you know, Biden and Trump, which, you know, okay.
I'm not sure that that's how that works, since your stomach isn't actually connected to your brain. But again,
there is
part
that
of his brain that perhaps knows how anatomy works was eaten. The thing is he has... He's also done a whole lot of drugs in his life, and he will talk about this as well. And it just makes me think of Ozzy Osbourne and all of the drugs that he did in his life and kind of comparing the two, you know.
There's an excellent question. Is it possible the brain worm is some kind of new drug that we don't know about yet that hasn't hit the hip culture?
Like, is this what happens when you do LSD? I don't know. Like, all of a sudden worms come out of the walls or something and then crawl in your ears.
Yeah, you know, this election cycle, just very, very bizarre. This week you also had Marjorie Trainwreck Greene get her 15 seconds. But this time didn't go as planned. She's really taken a beating over this.
Oh, yeah. She got booed by everybody. I mean, not just Democrats this time, her own party booed her. And I think it's Marjorie picked the wrong horse. When Kevin McCarthy became speaker, she basically sucked up to him as much as humanly possible. And then the guy was gone. And she kind of was in between a rock and a hard place, because it's like, you picked your horse and he got kicked out of the race. So then you've got to come up with some other plan, and either you're going to shift focus and become the Mike Johnson loyalist, or you're going to have to just go, you know, crazy and go after him. And she has chosen the latter option.
Well, we'll see. And finally, Gavin Newsom working on a new memoir. I wonder if there'll be any, if he'll regale us with tales of staring down Kim Jong-un or shooting puppies in the face.
You know, Newsom, so Gavin has a lot of stories. And for those of us who used to work in San Francisco politics, like we kind of, like, there were a lot of folks that knew Gavin. And he always sort of seemed like this very sad, pretty rich boy. And I just don't think that that is the kind of person that shoots a puppy. I could be wrong, but it just doesn't seem like, you know, he doesn't seem like the puppy killer type. And that's even after he was married to Kimberly Guilfoyle.
I'm not going there. I'm not touching that one. I am not touching that one. As always, Sarah, I appreciate the time. Great work. Hope folks will take a look at the site, rawstory.com. Sarah Burris, thanks so much.
Have an awesome weekend.
You as well. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1980. That was the day that as many as 90,000 people rallied for the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment in Grant Park in Chicago, Illinois. The proposed amendment to the Constitution read, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." The idea to amend the Constitution to ensure equal rights for women was first proposed by Alice Paul in 1923. In the late 1960s, with the second wave feminist movement, the push for the amendment gained momentum. At the time, women only made 59 cents for each dollar earned by men. Not all labor leaders supported the Equal Rights Amendment. Some worried that the proposed constitutional amendment would nullify existing labor protections for women in the workforce. They instead advocated for legislation around specific issues faced by women. Myra K. Wolfgang, a vice president of the Hotel and Restaurant Employees and Bartenders International Union, testified against the ERA before the Senate in 1970. The ERA passed Congress in 1972, but in order for the amendment to go into effect, 38 states had to ratify it. 30 quickly did so, but then a backlash against the legislation began to gain momentum. Illinois was the only northern state that was a holdout for ratifying the amendment. A massive rally was planned. That morning, the Chicago Tribune described the crowd that was expected, including representatives from labor, religion, show business, politics, and the home. Despite this massive turnout, the Equal Rights Amendment failed to win enough support in Illinois. The amendment fell three states short of becoming the law of the land. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. So some good news coming out of Vermont, and good on you. The State House of Representatives earlier in the week passed the Vermont PRO Act, Senate Bill 102, by a 115 of 150 members. And the Senate on, I believe it was on Thursday, they passed it. So now you have both the House and the Senate who have passed the Vermont PRO Act. It's going to go to Governor Phil Scott's desk. We'll see if he's going to sign it. Now, what this does is it makes it easier for workers to join and form unions, both in the private and the public sector. And some of the good stuff on ending captive audience meetings, These are, you know, look, you don't need to go beating up on your employees and harassing them, forcing them to listen to your anti-union harassment. And look, what it does is it goes back to the way it was when my grandparents' generation built the most prosperous working class in history, and that's majority sign up. This idea that you have to subject your employees and our co-workers to the kind of abuses that have happened over the years, I don't know. Now, here's the thing. What we do know, states with good union density, in fact, you know, Vermont is, what, the 14th most union dense state in the country. What we know is states that have higher union density have better wages. Pretty simple. The more bargaining power you have, the better wages you get to fight for. Also have more people with health insurance, more people with retirement plans, safer working conditions. You could go down the whole list and go, you know, for workers, high density states, much better, without question. Without question, and regardless of how we're sliced and diced, whether you're a marginalized part of the marginalized community, woman, minority, whatever, all better. And that, for working people, is a good thing. Now, the business community, they don't like it. Cuts into the profits. Cuts into their ability to line their pockets. And this is where we, you know, as the people who actually do the work and create the wealth that they pocket, should probably demand more. So good on Vermont. I would love to see every state across this country go in this direction. Go, look, you know, even if you're not going to get it passed, talk about it. You know, the other day we had someone on from the UAW talking about going into small businesses and explaining the contract process, explaining why it's important to have a union contract, why it's important to win good raises, why it's important for the entire community. This is that conversation. This is, you know, now I don't know if Phil Scott's gonna sign this. Hope he does. I think it would be good for their state. But the message that comes out of it, union job, better life, pretty simple. Something that we should be hammering on every single day. And finally, our good friends at the Culinary Union, Friday, May 10th, 5 a.m. through Sunday, May 12th at 4:59 a.m., they're going to do a 48-hour strike at Virgin Las Vegas. Over 700 hospitality workers are going to hit the picket line. And this is one of those things. It's historic. It's a first. This is the first time that this employer has forced this kind of situation. The first time that they've struck. It has never happened before. And you go, nobody wants to go on strike. Nobody wants this. But sometimes you need to jumpstart talks. Because look, they're fighting for a contract. They want a contract that's going to respect their work, going to reward their work, and give an opportunity to make these careers and not just McJobs. Also, the Culinary Union urges folks in the community. So if you're in Las Vegas, customers in Las Vegas, patrons, folks at the Virgin, the Virgin Hotel there, don't go. Don't cross the picket line. Don't participate in anything there. There are plenty of other places to go. Plenty of other places that, quite frankly, treat their workers better. The idea being, look, and understand, they're going to get past this. All of these moments where there's a strike, strikes are about getting people back to the table. Strikes are about saying, hey, let's reshuffle the cards a little bit and sit down and get headed in the right direction. And I'm hoping they will in this. This will work itself out as well. But we stand with our friends at the Culinary Union. On Monday, maybe Tuesday, we're going to get somebody to come talk about this, because I think, again, you have to have these conversations and explain. Nobody wants it, but sometimes you need to go through it. Sometimes you need to flex a little muscle, because the employers sure do, man. So good on them. I wish them the best. Want to hear your thoughts. Something I said got under your skin, on your nerves, made you mad, made you happy, made you sad. By all means, reach out to me. Tell me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Also, video over at freespeech.org. As always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM. W245 CT Hayward. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.